Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of August 5th. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. How you doing on a Sunday night, Jim?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing, man?
Oh, man, it's nice and warm. I've been waiting all year for this weather. I'm really happy that it's here, and I'm enjoying it. That's all I could say.
Well, I'm glad you are.
You don't sound glad.
No, I'm glad for you. I don't mind the heat normally, but I got a skin condition this year, and it's like I got to not sweat.
Good luck with that.
Make it clean.
Good luck with that.
Make it clear up. So I have to, like, make sure I'm not, like, wandering around sweating before I get to work, so I don't get to walk like I usually do on the way to work.
Right, right.
And it's kind of a drag, so I'm not getting my regular exercise. So I'm a little bummed.
Well,
but otherwise, I'm good. You know, I'm sort of reveling in not exercising. I'm taking the good for what I can get, you know?
All right. Well, good luck. I hope you get better, and I hope you feel better with that. Now, it's another tough day to concentrate on baseball with all that's happening in the world, but we'll do our best to stay focused. So on this week's show, we've got a chat with Scott McGuff of Yakult. We're going to discuss the Swallows. We've got our power ranking segment in mini tracks and a milestone for Yomiuri skipper Tatsunori Hara and much more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. Well, this past week, not quite a week ago, I went out to Yokohama Stadium and I had a chance to talk to lots of players. Unfortunately, I missed most of that. By spending pretty much 40 minutes talking, catching up with Spencer Patton because
the puncher
likes to talk. Yep. Because he likes to talk and I like to talk, and we hadn't talked in a long time, so we covered a lot of bases. And but I did, however, finally catch up with Scott McGuff, which I'd been trying to do for some time, of the Yakult Swallows. He's the closer du jour. Or, I don't know what the closer of the month, I guess, because Taichi Ishiyama is essentially the Swallows' closer, but he's had some fitness issues twice.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And the first time, they had a couple of people closing, and the second time, they said, "Scott, you're it." And he's like, going, "Oh, I thought we were going to do a committee kind of thing. You want me to be the chairman? Okay, so we had a chat back in the little air-conditioned space at Yokohama, and speaking of the heat, it was oppressively hot outside, and I said to Coco Ballantyne, you know, it's like labor abuse, you know, it's like physical abuse to make you guys go out and run around in this heat. And he said, you know who would say that? The guy who doesn't play baseball for a living. You guys got it easy. I said, yeah, I'll grant you that. I'll grant you that. I see you. So, okay, you guys go sweat. Me, I'm no sweat. So anyway, so Scott and I chatted about this and that, and it was engaging. It was engaging. It was riveting stuff, and I hope you enjoy it. So take it away.
So our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Scott McGuff of the Yakult Swallows, for the time being, the Yakult Swallows closer. So thank you for being on our show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for spending some time with us.
No problem.
Okay, now, first of all, your first year in Japan, and you've been, like, as we were talking, you've been all over the minor leagues.
Yeah.
And was it a big decision to come to Japan?
No. I mean, you know, it was kind of a great opportunity. I was really excited about the chance to come over here and try something new. And so whenever the Swallows contacted me, it was kind of a no-brainer from my end.
Okay. Now, did you have any friends or teammates who played in Japan before?
I've ran into a few guys along the way just playing through the minor leagues. Okay. You run into so many different guys. So
okay.
I've ran into a few guys that have played over here, so I got to talk to them. And every single one of them have always had good things to say and how much they want to go back.
Yeah, so Zach Neal from the Lions told us a couple of weeks ago, if you have a chance, don't miss it. Don't blow it.
I played with him in the minor leagues with the Marlins.
You may have played with everybody in the minor leagues, I'm beginning to think. So tell me a little bit about what you bring to the game as a pitcher?
I'm pretty much your standard strike thrower. I try to throw as many strikes as possible, but throw a fastball, a slider, and a split.
Okay. Now, when you come to Japan, you've obviously, especially with all those pitches, they act a little differently with the ball.
Absolutely.
Now, how is that adjustment? You're throwing it to a different spot than you used to be before, or the grip is infinitesimally a little bit of?
Definitely. So I changed my grip on my splitter.
Okay.
And I also changed kind of location on the off speed, especially.
Okay.
Especially with slider and splitter, because after maybe like the first month and a half, my pitching coach came up to me and he was just showing me some stats just about how I'd get ahead of a lot of guys. But here in Japan, they don't strike out.
Uh-huh.
You know, they foul off pitches, and battle so well. So 0-2, guys were hitting like 380 off me.
Okay.
And 0-1, guys were hitting like 500 off me. So he was really kind of teaching me to throw that strike to ball off speed pitch and kind of out of the zone to get guys to chase more. Whereas the States, you know, you can get away with more strikes and you'll get more swings and misses because everyone's trying to hit a home run, but that's not the case here.
Yeah, they don't. I think the concept of the two-strike swing, compact, go the opposite way is kind of gone out of business in America.
Yeah.
But here in Japan, it's alive and well.
Yeah, it absolutely is, yeah.
Yeah, so you made the adjustments, mm-hmm. and then the big one, was that the big one?
Yeah.
The mental adjustment of, I need a plan B for 2-0.
Right. Right. That was the biggest thing for me, just because I was getting burned on it so much.
Oh, okay.
And I should have noticed it early on in Okinawa during spring camp. I had like my first outing, I had a 12-pitch at bat.
Okay.
And it was just like I was throwing everything at him. I even dropped down, throw sidearm on the guy. You know, he's still fouling stuff off. And I should have realized it then, but it took me a little bit of time. And once the coaches came to me, we kind of worked on some things and thought about some things. So that really helped.
That reminds me, because when you said that, I looking in your eyes, and I had this image from the science fiction movie about people battling robots. And how come you're like Terminator? This guy is still here, 11 pitches, and he's still here. What is up with this?
It's like a battle. That's right. That's what it is.
Oh, man. So it's really hard to imagine that, but I certainly sympathize with having the way you're used to playing baseball, you know, very subtly
changed
on its head.
Yeah.
So now, how comfortable are you with that? Is that sometimes do you still think, oh, two strikes, I'm ready to go?
Of course. That's just like in my DNA, I guess. You know, I just want to throw that fastball up in the zone for a strike. But, you know, here that doesn't always work. And
okay.
So that's what, you know, sometimes I'll have to think to myself out there, like, okay, this is the better pitch in this situation. So I still catch myself from time to time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you definitely got that extra, okay, I can make somebody chase.
Yeah, yeah.
So in America, you weren't so much a bury the slider, the two-strike slider guy.
Not really, no. I try to, you know, I try to think of myself like I don't have an ego, so what's a strikeout or ground ball? You know, you're getting the guy out regardless.
Okay.
So it's no skin off my nose whether he hits a fly ball, ground ball, or strikes out.
Okay.
So I would always go right at guys. Don't waste any pitches, but... You know, it's different here whenever guys can foul it off and you're throwing 10 pitches and instead your inning turns into 30 pitches like that. And as a reliever, you know, I'm exhausted out there by 30 pitches. So.
Yeah, great. I'm sure you're thinking, just what I needed in this cool summer weather. Okay. Now tell me about the other experience of coming to Japan, because it's not just on the mound.
Right.
I mean, things are a little different. I mean, how have you enjoyed the experience?
I've loved it so far. The
really?
Guys have taken me in on the team, like the local Japanese guys, and I've gone out to eat with them a bunch. And that's what really has made it more fun for me. You know, because it's not just the baseball aspect of it, it's the life, it's the culture. And so they've taken me in like family. And so when we're on the road, I go out every single night with them. You know, someone on the team, we're going to a different place. Okonomiyaki is my favorite in Osaka. You know, you name it, I'm crushing. So it's just been a great, great time.
I love it. So you're from Pennsylvania originally.
Originally, yep.
Okay, but you've been all over America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like by the time you got to, and then you were in the Winter League?
Yeah, I played in Mexico this past year.
Okay, how was that experience?
It was great. It was a great experience. I'm glad I did it. It was fun to travel around,
mm-hmm.
but it was eye-opening for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Just of, you know, the different culture in Mexico.
Right.
And how they live and the food they eat and the security and lack thereof and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So
You see, you had to make a couple of adjustments.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then you come to Japan and you got more adjustments.
More adjustments.
Excellent. Yeah. So lots of life learning going on.
Yeah. But I like that. You know, that's fun. That's all about life. It's like enjoying the fun times and getting used to different people and different cultures. And I think that makes you grow as a person.
So when you had, you're having all this fun and you, it must have, when you had your teammates had your back like that, obviously, and you had some struggles. How important is that when your teammates are feeling like family and what's that feeling like?
That's really important, especially on a new team in a new country.
Yeah.
You know, where you're trying to set yourself up and hey guys, like I'm here for real, you know, and be a good team player and help the team win. So whenever you do let your team down on a couple different nights and let up some runs and not do your job, you know, you're exceptionally bummed. So it's just awesome that, you know, after a tough night where I give up a couple runs, hey, let's go out to eat. You know, they're still laughing. We're drinking highballs. We're having a great time, you know, and it just takes the pressure away of that.
I'm guessing that was not always the case when you failed before in the minor leagues.
That's correct.
Oh, my. Okay, well, welcome to Japan and welcome to the Swallows, and we wish you long and happy success here.
Thank you very much. Okay, thanks for having me.
No, thanks for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Okay, Scott, thank you very much for your time and your energy. It was a real pleasure.
Much appreciated, Scott. I actually have only waved and from a distance, but hopefully we'll get a chance to talk soon.
Yeah, John wasn't stalking. Not yet.
Not yet.
Give him time.
Give me a few months.
Yeah, so the first thing I noticed about Scott is he had played everywhere. I mean, where's Bowie or Bowie? Okay.
Where's Waldo?
Exactly. You know, Norfolk and Bowie and here and there and the minors and all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, now all over the place is including Japan. So anything that stuck out for you?
Well, you know, I get the interviews and I like to go through them and edit them anyway. And I got this one, and the first time I listened to it, I thought, okay, this is your garden variety chat. It's a guy who's just gotten here. And I think a lot of times when we listen to these interviews, and especially pitchers, I think a lot of the pitchers take it upon themselves to explain Japanese baseball to us and tell us about the batters, and it seemed like he was going to go on that path. But anyway, I listened to it again, and I just found backdoor sliders everywhere throughout this chat. Like I said, it just doesn't seem like that on the surface, but upon closer inspection, you can really, really get a lot of good information about the inner workings of teams, and that is really what stuck with me when I listened to it the second time. Was I love the teammate acceptance and camaraderie thing, and I thought that was huge. And I think when you hear about him, let's say, dropping down sidearm in a spring training game, it kind of reminded me of a conversation I had with someone I often discuss sports with, and just the whole aspect of him and the team too. It just reminded me of this conversation. And I always say, look, the only people who really care about the game results, like they focus on the game results, are the fans and the sports books. because everyone else, the coaches, anyone else with a vested interest, let's say, other than the business side of the team, all the other people are more focused on the process. The results, as the players say, are the results, and you can't control all that stuff. So when you hear McGough saying things like he gave up runs, but the guys were taking him out and they were having, I don't know what a highball is, I don't drink, but I know it's some kind of alcoholic beverage, and they were having fun even though he gave up some runs and maybe he felt badly, was because I think they're saying, look, we're all out here together, and if you're giving up runs, in part, it's because, you know, we didn't help you enough. Either we didn't score enough for you, we didn't play enough good defense behind you, or we have to take some responsibility as well, but it's not all your fault. So that's what I hear in there, you know, and I keep saying people, I really don't think that the coaches, I know obviously the managers have to win games to stay and keep their jobs, but there's everybody from the coaches to the players to everyone on the field, they're focused on process and how to get good results. But you can't stare at the results and expect them to be the same, because there's too many things that are out of your control as a player. You can only do your job. You can only do your job. And so,
but Japan does have that dynamic of, and I don't know where it comes from, but there is a dynamic where the results are more important than the
content. To whom?
Sometimes to the coaches, because it's not, and I don't think it's really the case, but I've heard so many times when the coaches will basically use the results to beat a player over the head.
But again, I think that they're maybe doing that because the process isn't the way they want the process to be, and so they take the results to get the process that they want. I don't think it's about the results.
Yes, but what they're talking, yes, I think you're right, but they're going at it fast backwards.
Well, their approach is the approach. I don't think they're so much worried about the focus.
But what I mean is,
I think it's how you get there.
When I'm saying approach, I'm thinking like, you know, I don't like how the guy warms up, or I don't like something. I'm trying to modify their behavior, even if the process is fine. I don't like the results. You know, there are things players do get coaches goats sometimes. And if you get a coach's goats sometimes, they'll complain about the results. You know, you throw the good pitch, the lucky swing, the lucky hit, and you gave up a hit there. And I've heard this. I've had pretty much every pitcher, every player in Japan complain about coaches getting on them for things that really won't, you know, just happen. So it's not, you know, at some point, sometimes they really, coaches and front office people too, and I think the coaches sometimes get on players because front office people get on the coaches.
Right, but I don't know about the front office, but my point was the guys on the field, the guys who are really involved in the game, not the business side, front office people
well,
who
I'm
want
talking
more
about
home
coaches.
Runs or
I'm talking about coaches. I ain't talking about the media.
Oh, I was never talking about the media. I mean, they're the least of the people who matter, to be honest. I mean, they certainly have an impact, because sometimes what they say and how they cover point the fingers, because sometimes it's us as well, but how we cover things, we look at the results. But, yeah, I can never sit around and say, well, these are bad results, and say that the process is bad, because I don't know what the process is.
I'm just saying, right. It's not as black and white as you make it sound, because I've had my fill of this, coaches complaining and telling guys to work more on their hitting because they hit four line drives at guys.
Right.
I've heard it in Japan.
To be honest, I hear what you're saying is that there's still a problem in the process, and that's what they're using to try to change the results. But
yeah, but the process is often things that have nothing to do with the game.
Well, yeah,
I'm saying it's just the I'm in charge and you're not gonna, you know, there's a lot of that too.
I would imagine there's some politics involved, but I mean, we're just generally. In general.
In general, yes. Okay.
So, obviously with Scott, gosh, we got kind of off track there. That's your thing. That's not usually my thing. But you hear Scott talking about how difficult it is to get Japanese batters out, and I know we've heard a lot about that. The pitchers tell us all the time. So that was no big thing. But I thought it was really, I want to say enlightening, but I'm thinking, I think I would have noticed, you know, I would have noticed if I was ahead of guys 0-1 or 1-2 and that they were hitting 380 something and 5 something against me when I was ahead in the count. I think I would have noticed, and I found it odd that Scott, it didn't clue in, and that he needed the pitching coach to tell him about it and throwing strike to ball. I think a lot of times, or a long time ago on the show, I said a lot of times what the pitchers in Japan are trying to do is disguise a ball as a strike. So Scott said it, throw a pitch that goes from strike to ball and try to get guys to chase. And yeah, when you're ahead in the count, that's always the ultimate goal, I think. But it's hard to execute the pitches. You know, it's still not that easy. And these guys are so good at fouling off balls and staying on everything. And I just found that really enlightening. I guess enlightening is the word I want to use in terms of having, you know, him having to have the pitching coach tell him about that. That seemed kind of, I don't know, off to me a little bit, maybe. I think I would have noticed. I would have noticed if guys, I kept getting ahead of guys and they were getting hits. But that's me.
Yeah, well, I've found athletes are funny because, you know, I remember asking Norichika Aoki once. He talked about wanting to hit more home runs off of left-handed pitchers. After I think his first year where he hit 10 home runs, he hit one off a lefty.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew who it was. And I didn't know at the time, but I said, oh, who was it? And he looked at me like I had just asked him to, you know, tell me what his cousin's license plate number was.
How am I supposed to know that?
I know. It's like, but you talk to athletes enough and you find so many of them, like, they know what socks they were wearing when they hit that home run off that left-handed pitcher.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing. But, you know, people remember different things.
Exactly. It depends on the player. Yep.
Yeah, so I thought that was was quite interesting, too. People go along and they don't see things because they're focusing on other things. And, of course, when you're new, you've got a lot of things to focus on. And I think it was clear that he gave me this look when he explained that 12 pitch at bat in spring in preseason, and I'm thinking his eyes just got really wide, and I had been watching a sci-fi movie the night before, and there were robots and they were trying to kill these robots by bashing them, and they kept moving, and that's why I had this image of him wanting to go get the bat and just knock the guy's head. See if it came off and still run. You know, it was kind of otherworldly, but it was you know, it was good fun. I think the thing that got me was the life learning and unlearning. You know, we were talking about all the lessons. You know, learning this, learning there, and of course the other one, unlearning. You know, learning just not to keep throwing strikes when you're ahead 0-2. And then I'll go back to the bit about the players. Now, and this is somewhat in between what we were talking about before. I think in Japan, the players are pretty much all going to welcome everybody when they come in.
You know, right.
They're going to throw their arms out. You know, they're going to embrace you with both arms. But, of course, things change. You know, of course, you have to also respond to your teammates.
Correct.
You have to be, you know, you can't just be telling them to buzz off all the time because that wears it. That, you know, that'll wear out your welcome quickly. But I think the players tend to be very welcoming in Japan, and I think that's a great thing. So if you're into that, and obviously he is, and I think he's more receptive to it than many. But the other thing is that while I think all the players, 90% of all the players are going to welcome you. 90% of all the teams aren't going to welcome you with open arms when you fail.
Right.
And there are teams that's like, if you had some of the bumps that he had starting out, he would have got a chance to figure out his issues, you know, up in Toda Park in Saitama Prefecture, where the Swallows have their minor league facility.
Right. Yeah, probably most likely. Yeah, I like that camaraderie aspect of it. And really, it seemed to me that's the Swallows. Because it's basically, you know, I talked to Aaron Gile years and years ago. And it just seems like it's that team against the world, right? They're the second team in Tokyo, so to speak, within the city limits, let's say. because mm-hmm. we have lots of teams up here in the Kanto region, but within the Tokyo city limits, it's just them and the Giants. And it just seems that it's a us against the world kind of mentality with that team in general. And it doesn't spend a whole lot of money. It spends some, but not a whole lot of money. So when they bring in a player like that, they want to do the best they can, the fellow players and teammates, to make them feel welcome and make the whole easing into the lifestyle portion as mm-hmm. comfortable as possible. And it just seemed to me to be a very Yakulti kind of thing, that maybe yep. you don't have that kind of kumbaya kind of situation on some other teams, like you say. You know, hey, you gave up some runs. Yeah. Hey, man, let's have fun. Let's have fun on the road, and we'll do better next game. So forget about the.
Well, I know when the Swallows offered a trio, when the team offered a trio of foreign players of big long-term contracts after their first taste of Esker, Tony Barnett, and Vladimir Ballantyne, and last things Millage. Basically, they all said the same thing. You know, I wouldn't be here, I wouldn't be succeeding if it wasn't for manager Junji Ogawa basically saying, you know what, I'm dependent on you to do your thing, and you go do it. You know, he's, when it comes to dealing with the foreigners, he can be kind of a disciplinarian sometimes. He likes off tough a little bit. He's got a big heart though, and I think that's his true nature, even if he likes, you know, it's no fun being a losing manager and having to talk about what the players don't do right. He's much happier talking about what they do, you know, what they are doing right.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about the Swallows then, and you know, here's another area where I think in the prediction show I had this team pretty much pegged. And like I said, it's one of the few times that I got something right, so it's not that I'm patting myself on the back, but, and of course the season's not over, but they're having trouble, they're floundering in the Central League, they're in last place, and when you really consider the scope of the Central League and kind of the offensive drop-offs that the Swallows are having, because remember I said they put a good at-bat on you, but they don't score nearly like they were maybe a couple years ago. And you look at their record now, I don't have the totals under Ogawa as the manager, but they're not doing very well under him. And I really questioned why they brought him back to be the manager, but I just figured they were doing something comfortable, that a lot of the players knew him, and that the pitchers had done fairly well his first year, I think, when he took over and guided them into the playoffs, I believe it was. But I'm just not...
You mean his first term, you mean?
His first, well, 2011, and they finished second place that year. And I guess he had taken over part of the year in 2010 when Shigeru Takada quit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't count that first year, 2010, but as his first year. 2011, they finished second, went to the playoffs. I'm just not feeling him as the manager, but they have done okay. But they have, you know, two last place finishes under him, and they're in last place again. And all told, this is year six for him. So six plus years, if you want to count the seasons. But anyway, I'm looking at their starting pitching. I'm looking at their relief pitching. They just have holes everywhere. And compounding that problem is the fact that they don't score as much as they were scoring. I think that maybe the past couple of years, like I said, the image of them, you know, you were the one who brought
it up. Their offense is actually, I think you're missing the boat with the offense. I think it's actually better than I expected of the defense, which is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I might be missing the boat if you look at the total numbers, but it just seems that teams pitch them differently when they have a lead. Anyway, you pointed to the shortstop position the last time we spoke about the Swallows as a problem area, and I still contend that the outfield probably isn't that great.
Aoki's not really a good center fielder anymore, and then they've got two guys who aren't good corner outfielders anymore. So yeah, the outfield's pretty bad. shortstop's pretty bad.
Oh, I was looking at the infield and I was thinking this is the Central League version of the Cebu Lions, basically, because we've got maybe one really good defensive player, maybe in Tetsuto Yamada, and then
after... No, that's an insult to the Lions.
Hashtag high heat.
No, because I suppose, the Lions have
the Lions don't have
Lions
great outfield.
Have one, yeah. No, they don't. But they don't.
On the
they
infield,
don't have a great outfield. Akiyama is an average defender at this stage, and Genda's probably the best shortstop in Japan. So. The Swallows don't really have that. I mean, Yamada.
Well, I like Yuhei Nakamura as a catcher. I think he's one of the best in Japan.
No, I think
as
he's
well.
Good. Yes,
so I'm counting
good.
Him on the infield. So.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And Tetsuto Yamada is a very good second baseman.
Right. So they have two really good defensive players.
Yeah, on the whole team. Yeah, the outfield's not there. The rest of the infield's not there.
Yeah. So you know, and poor Munetaka. Murakami, I love his swing. I love the kid, but with a glove, he could scare some of those robots you spoke about earlier. Maybe he could scare them away because he's pretty bad. But he's still young. He's 19. He's not going to be 20 until February. So he's just going to have to learn how to play. And they had him at third. They've had him at first base. You know, if I would imagine if Coco wasn't on the team that he would be in left field. He would have been put in left field already. He looks like an outfielder in the making. I don't know what they're... I mean, he's just going to... I heard... I know you watch Proyaku News fairly regularly mm-hmm. now, and I heard one of the commentators say, well, he's just going to have to practice.
Pretty much. I'm on it with that. I mean...
He he's only 19. He's got lots of years to practice.
Yeah. I think, you know, the biggest problem, I mean... Offensively, the big problem is that they strike out a lot. I mean, they lead the league and they lead both leagues in strikeouts. They lead both leagues in walks. The walks are the good things. That's a silly thing to say, but I mean, they're not a bad offensive team because of the home runs and the walks.
But yeah, but you talk about the fact that the home runs are cheap at Jingu, so yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But I mean, no, I mean, even given that, I don't think they have the worst offense in the league. Whereas I think they do have the worst defense. They do have the worst pitching and defense in the league.
Yeah, and I looked at that rotation. Well, you know, I think we joked about it the previous year. I think I made light of it. This year as well, and then I went through the guys who have started, and you know there aren't many guys with three wins. Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa has a career worst 10 losses already.
I mean that's really a huge thing right there. He's probably had about four or five good games this year.
Right.
He's basically having a, you know, basically his career has run and hit on him this year like Shota Imanaga's did last year.
Mm-hmm. Right, of the DNA Bay Stars.
Yeah, he's been replaced by an android or something. Because it's really not him.
Well, you know the team leader is in wins at the moment?
Well, it was for the long... Well, the league leader in wins for
No,
a while,
team leader.
Okay, I'm just saying it was... Yoti Igarashi, I don't know who it is now.
Well, he still is. With his five wins out of the bullpen lead the way. And then it's Masanori Ishikawa who has four. And our guest on the show this week, Scott, has four wins as well. Along with Hirotoshi Takanashi.
How's he do that? He's not over 40.
What are you doing? Put that back.
this is for the elders.
That's right. So it's just it's really been a nightmare. And I mean, a shout out to NPB Reddit. Earlier in the season, he was commenting frequently about the Swallows, and we know he's a Swallows fan. And suddenly, the comments just disappeared. And recently, I tweeted out that Tetsuto Yamada after yet another loss the Swallows suffered was dead inside, and I think that's the way MPB Reddit is feeling about the Swallows, because he just stopped tweeting about all their inefficiencies and issues that he was seeing on a nightly basis. So hang in there, Reddy, man.
A couple of things about the Swallows, and Swallows have their relief ERA is the worst in the CL through Saturday, 3.93, just barely ahead of Yomiuri. But having said that, their late relief is very good. So the guys have been coming out in the eighth and ninth inning in close games has been very good. It's Hanshin's, and I use a number called OPS2. I don't know if you know that one. It's basically...
Nope.
It's OPS except...
Sounds like a nerd number, yeah.
Yeah, it is, but it's a really nice one because on-base percentage is so much more valuable than slugging average.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically two on-base... It's the average of two times the on-base percentage and the slugging average.
Okay.
Okay, so anyway, OPS2 is a 273 for the relievers. Their opponent's OPS2 against... the Swallows is 273. That's the second best in NPB.
Mm.
Hanshin's is 240. I mean, just think of people, of teams having 240 on base percentages.
Okay. I got you. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, so that's really good. That's the eighth and ninth relief inning has not been a problem for them. Of course, they're having problems actually getting, they don't have as many innings in that area. They haven't had played as many close games in that area. Okay, so now I'm going to throw a bunch of numbers out for the Swallows.
Okay. Let's see if we can catch them, guys.
Okay. The first one is 2013. This is the last time a team in Japan finished last in the league, but first in Japan in walks.
Wow.
Okay.
Was that the Swallows as well? Because that was their...
It was the Swallows. It's the second time.
That was
1975.
The...
Yomiuri Giants, the year when they fired one of the greatest managers in Japanese baseball history and replaced him with Shigeo Nagashima.
The only reason I would think it was 2013 was because that was Coco Ballantyne's record-breaking home run season in which he walked a bunch of times.
And the Giants and the Swallows finished last. Okay. Then the next number is 1942. That is the year the Japan Baseball Federation began counting caught-stealing attempts.
Okay.
Okay. 26. That is the most stolen bases in a season without being caught. That was Kazuo Matsui, in case you're curious.
Okay.
13.
And the reason you bring that up, I think you should explain, is because we're at 26.
I know, but it's coming.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, 13, the number of times Swallows runners have been caught stealing in this year. That's the lowest number in Japan.
Okay.
0.324, that is the Yakult's opposing batting average on balls in play.
What is it again?
324.
Wow. And that's probably...
Wow, indeed. And that is the highest in Japan. The Cebu Lions, if you're curious, is 307.
And they're second?
No.
Second highest?
They're fourth.
Oh, wow.
But everybody's close to that. Everybody's close to 307, 309. The Giants are at 309. The Swallows are on their own planet. Okay, and zero, which is the number John knows. The number of times Tetsuto Yamada has been caught stealing in 23 times this season, in 23 tries this season. So
it's that. Okay, 23. Now 24 because he had one tonight. So yeah, without being caught. And yeah, that's awesome. And I because he hasn't been caught stealing, I went and looked it up, and it was Shuhei Fukuda of SoftBank who stole 32 consecutive bases without being caught. But that was between 2011 and 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting. But
the
player who over one season has the most without being caught was a Hall of Famer, Yoshinori Hirose of Nankai in 1964. He stole 31 bases without being caught. So
In a stretch.
Right, over a season.
Because he was thrown out that season.
Okay, in a stretch. A stretch during the season. Okay.
Yep. All right. Okay.
31-0. So, that's the most. So, yeah, Yamada is approaching that record. So that's awesome for him. So there's some good things to watch. And I still think this team is fun to watch. You've got, if not for Koji Chikamoto of Hanshin just doing so well, I think Murakami would be, because, the media loves the home runs and the RBIs, and he... obviously, he's set the Central League record now with being the second year player out of high school to have as many home runs and RBIs as he has. But the MPB leader is Kazuhiro Kiyohara, who did it with Seibu. Who's got Murakami has time to catch him in some of the in both areas, I think. But he's gonna have to go wild. But so there's a lot to watch, a lot to like about this team, and all the games are in the Central League are going to be impactful in the pennant race. So it's not like you're going to look away, and they're still going to win their share of games because everybody's close. It seems they might be lagging behind, but it's still everybody's fairly close. I think there's a lot of positives to take out of the season, and especially Murakami, whose swing I've just fallen in love with.
Yeah, John's, his wife's getting jealous.
Well, I haven't told her that I called his swing baseball porn, but if I do, she'll say, well, I better not catch you watching that late at night.
Hashtag high heat.
I just say, as long as you're not swinging with one hand.
Oh no! Okay, let's make a clean 4-seam transition and move into our power ranking segment, mini tracks. Wow! Let's move ahead. Sorry, we apologize, listeners. So, if you just look at the month now, the month of July, I think the Fighters, they went 16-6, which was one shy of the club record of 17 that they won in 2016, in July, by the way. Hanshin and Yakult both went 9-12. The Swallows have just struggled, so we know that they're cold, and actually the Giants have been struggling. But do you realize since Yamada Tetsuto made his top team debut with the Swallows, that the team has finished last three times and is heading for a fourth time? And they finished fifth.
Well, he made his debut like 3 years before he was an MVP. So,
well, I'm just saying he's experienced a lot of losing there.
Yeah.
And we obviously have seen that the Carp are really hot right now, but the Bay Stars have been really consistent too. They've been really good. So in July, the Bay Stars were 15-8. And they've been doing really well. And I think I looked up some other numbers because I had some time tonight when I got home. So the Carp are making a strong push to reclaim the top spot in the Central League, and they are 13-2 since July 19th, and they've won all these games, and they're still not in first place. Why? Because the Yokohama Bay Stars they've gone 12-2 during that time, that same stretch since July 19th. So we've got it's all over the place. There's like really hot teams and a few teams that are kind of cold, and then a bunch of teams that are like scuffling and right in the middle and barely 500 in for July. And SoftBank, the Hawks, we thought, one night when they were playing the Lions this past week, I said, ugh, the Hawks are drowning in their own, and I put an ellipses, and then all of a sudden they were down 5-0, and they turned that game around, and they ended up winning it 11-10, I think it was. But still, they just can't seem. I mean, they've dealt with some injuries. They've got guys coming back. It's still, they don't seem to be able to put it together regularly on a run here.
It hasn't helped that they're losing a couple of guys to the Cuban national team. They've already lost to Yurisbel Graciel. There's still no word on when Yuki Inagita's coming back. they're missing lots of little bits and pieces.
Dennis Sarfati, we know his injury. The last report I heard was he might not be back this season. Shota Takeda, haven't heard from him.
Wada is back on the farm. Rick Vandenhurk is not available. You know, it's quite a injury list that they're dealing with. Yuito Mori is back, and he did pitch well. He was Shota Nakazaki of the Carp were sort of having these. They went through about a week and a half where they had to put at least two guys on in every ninth inning save situation. And then they saved most of those games, but it was just ugly, and it was cumbersome on them. It was wearing them down. So they both went back down. Shota Nakazaki has not returned yet, but Yuito Mori has come back, and he's pitched pretty well.
Yeah, but the Hawks, they were one of the teams that they had under 500 in July 11 and 12, and they lost five straight to open the second half after the All-Star break, and it's just been a dogfight. I still think when you get down to it, if everybody can get back, not everybody, but if most of their guys get back, that they're going to be the class of the Pacific League. But
yeah,
certainly, it's a big if, and certainly it's still going to be, it's not going to be easy for them as they go down the stretch. But getting back to the Carp, I think, I'll reference Proyaku News again, because the geezers, as you called them earlier this week in one of your tweets and your posts on jballallen.com, they were talking about how all the Carp players seemed to be in unison, that they were all slumping together, and now they're all hitting together again. And I kind of thought, well, they were hitting before, they just weren't driving the guys in. And I think that's kind of the easy surface view, but I think putting Kaito Kozono at shortstop and getting a little bit of steady defensive and offensive production, it kind of goes under the radar, because they weren't getting that with Kosuke Tanaka at shortstop. They were getting, he was not, I wouldn't say shoddy defense, but it was not his best defensive season that they were getting from him. And then he was doing very little with the bat. And they were getting, once he stopped making errors on easy plays, they were getting, at least decent production at the shortstop position defensively. And then he has been hitting. And anything that he was giving them seemed to be more than Tanaka. And I think that kind of sparked the other players around him, in that because they were getting guys on base and he was driving a few in, it just ticked the offense up another notch. And then, we've seen Xavier Bautista hit a little bit better. We've seen Alejandro Mejia go up and down from the farm to the top team.
They brought him up, and he had a couple of good games. They sent him back down, made some roster moves, and they brought him back up, and he's hitting again. And Batista's hitting again, and Seiya's as if he's hitting again, and Kikuchi's hitting a ton. And they're just a good team. I have never this season thought they weren't a really good team. They didn't have good results early in the season. I still don't think, right now, I think my guys, that the teams, if I just ranked them, they're really good DNA. Right after that, Carp and the Fighters. Really bad Hanshin. Really bad Hanshin. And then almost that bad Oryx. The Swallows the Tigers have, they may have a little better results than the Swallows, but they really haven't earned them.
Yeah, I think I would put the Bay Stars up there at one for me, and then the Carp, obviously. And, I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to find a Pacific League team that I'd put up there.
The Fighters actually have been quite good.
The Fighters, yeah. Yes, you're correct.
They've been the most consistent, I think the Fighters are the most dangerous team in the Pacific League to the Hawks. I mean, Well, the lions are always dangerous because they're other animals, you know. It's a jungle out there.
They're otherworldly with the bats, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, the pitching is as we've as noted.
Yeah, so yeah. So, yeah, 1, 2, 3, I think putting the Fighters in that third spot. But I would put the Swallows, I would put the Dragons, and I would put Lotte, the Marines, lower than I would Hanshin. I don't think Hanshin has been that bad. They've just been treading water. They've won a couple, lost a couple, won a couple, lost a couple, but I don't think they've been 500, but they haven't been bad. I think the Swallows have been in the negative side. I think the Marines have been in the negative side. I think the Eagles have been in the negative side. Those are the teams I would put at the bottom. But again, I just think any team that, if any team can really get on a run and has the pitching to get on a run late in, let's say, August and then into September, I think that team can pull away from the rest. I'm just fascinated. I'm compelled by the whole, by both leagues. Every night the games are great. I can't take my eyes off them, so I'm having really this is my kind of season. It's really fun to watch every single
game, so. Certainly, and I have to say what a fun week it was past week because of, you know, two new guys who were signed in July and
made
their ways. Yangervis Solarte with the Tigers, who is just a bundle of joy on the field, and
except
Linus
for
Martin.
Defensively, but yes. But well, I think part of that is they have to find, I mean, I don't think I'd play him at second. They had him playing at short. I don't think he can play third. They're not going to put him in the outfield. And so
they have put him in the outfield.
But I don't think they're going to keep him. I don't think they'll
do
that.
So.
Yeah, but Yusuke Oyama at third, he's their best defensive player, I think, on the field. So I don't see Solarte playing third. But with the bat, he's great. He's great, and what a burst of energy he has given the team, and I certainly like what he does and how excitable he is. It's really fun to watch. But yeah, they have issues in terms of where to play him, and their defense was already iffy, so once they get that settled and they can put him in a place and write him in one spot perhaps where he can't do too much damage defensively, I think they'll be really good going down the stretch. But they certainly have the pitching, so if the Carp are going to be winning games like this, it's going to be hard for them to crack into that that top three. Someone tweeted tonight that they think it's a three-horse race, and I'm like, nah, I see four horses. Maybe Hanshin has fallen off the pace a little bit, but they'll be back, I think. I think this team is gonna make another push, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about one of the milestones that was surpassed this week, and that was by Yomiuri Giants skipper Tatsunori Hara, who's in his third stint with the club, but the only franchise he has been the field manager for, and he picked up his 1,000th managerial win on Tuesday at Tokyo Dome, and he used Shun Yamaguchi as the starter that night, and that was a really smart move. That was a great move as a manager. Of course, Yamaguchi is injured now and was taken off the top team roster. But and that night, I think Hara had sprinkled the lineup with a bunch of backups and part-timers among some of the top performers like Hayato Sakamoto and Kazuma Okamoto. And it was not a star-laden group that he ran out there that night, and had guys like Akihiro Wakabayashi at second base and Yasuhiro Yamamoto at third, but they all helped out and they got the victory. And saw a tweet by Scott Matheson who said that Hara is one of the best managers he has ever played for. So I thought that was really high praise from Scott.
Oh, well, he's the third Giants manager with 1,000 wins, one of who was a great manager and one who managed a long time and had great success. The great manager was Tetsuharu Kawakami, and the manager who had great success was Shigeo Nagashima, who was much beloved by some of his players. And I could go on talking about this subject quite a long time, but I'll spare you all. But I just want to congratulate him on that, and I'm sure I didn't hear him say it, but I'm sure he probably said something to the effect of what Sato Haruo and others said when they won 1,000 games, which was, well, if you hang around long enough, you'll get there.
Actually, he was the hero interview that night. He was. Yeah,
and he said he said it feels awkward being the manager as being the hero, but, you know, thanks, guys. I wouldn't do it without the players, which is true enough.
Right, and then he said what, you know, you expect him to say. Well, you know, we got to put this game behind us and focus on trying to win the next one tomorrow. So, what happened?
That one, they're still looking for, I think he's still looking for the 1,001.
They're in the midst of their longest losing streak of the season at 5 games, so... So 1,001, hopefully he can get that by the time he gets here.
Once 1,001, you better go watch a Disney movie or something.
What is that, 1,001 Dalmatians, is that?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Who is it who has the most wins as a manager?
That'd be Kazuto Tsuruoka, the Hall of Fame manager of the Nankai Hawks.
Right. You're right. And as I'm looking it up here, he's got 1,773 wins as a manager. So, you know, Hada's fairly young. He could catch him.
Yeah.
Especially if he stays with the Giants.
Possible. He might have fourth or fifth stint with the Giants. Who knows?
Divorce and remarriage situation. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Now, there was something...
Well, he's still never been fired by the Giants, which is odd for a guy who's in his third trip. He quit once. He quit once because he was tired of reading of the things the Giants owner said when he was drunk about him in the newspaper every morning. and then he quit once because he kind of burned out a bit 4 years ago. So... He still hasn't been fired, so good for him.
All right. I think it was Alizoto, tweeted out the guys who had the most saves, so under Hada's stints as manager. And so who
that
do
would
you think?
Be Mark Kroon?
Yes. Mark Kroon has the most with 93. Who's next, do you think?
I would say Koji Uehara.
No. He is he's sixth on the list. Well, it looks like he's fifth. But he's down on the way. It is Kentaro Nishimura with 81.
Right.
Yeah, I looked at this list. It was really, really an interesting list. And
that was an interesting list because Mark Kroon, you know, the Giants were a team that came very late to the closer. They were one of the big first, at least Mr. Kawakami was one of the early adopters of the of a relief ace.
Mm-hmm.
But the role was different and there was no save. I'm going to have to go back and retroactively figure those puppies at some point. But the Giants never had one reliever saved 20 games 2 years in a row until Mark Kroon joined them from the Bay.
Wow.
Because, you know, they'd have guys who'd save a bunch of games and then they'd burn them out.
Right.
And Koji Uehara was the guy who'd saved, I think he was the first one to save 30 for the Giants. And then the next year he was gone.
See ya, I'm going to the States. Yep.
I got to have Tommy John or something. Oh, you can have Tommy John.
Okay. No, he's one of the guys who didn't, yeah.
Well, actually, most of them didn't. Most of them didn't. We like to think most of them did, but most of them didn't.
Okay. All right, making a seamless transition, we'd like to talk about the top players for July. So I actually, this exercise I thought was going to be very difficult, and then when I looked at some of the numbers, I thought it was going to be easy, and then... one of the leagues, the pitching top pitcher is going to be very difficult to play. So let's to find or guess or I don't know how they go about choosing it. But
I actually think both leagues are a little. I don't think either league is a slam dunk.
No. It's going to be tough. So let's start in the Central League. I've got Yoshiyuki Kame of the Giants, just because he's the one guy who's hit 400. He's hitting 404.
Yeah, interesting.
And he had 36 hits. And so it's not like it's a small sample size or he just played part-time. It was basically every day and had 36 hits to lead the way in that regard. So
yeah, he had a monster week in the middle of July. This is going to be interesting because I think Sakamoto actually had a better month.
Mm-hmm.
Very infinitesimally, and we'll see if they hang on to that, the old Nippon Seimei, he batted 400, so who cares if he actually did anything?
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying that Kame didn't have a good month. He had a great month. I'm just saying that Sakamoto also had a great month, but he only hit 350 something. So
right, and Sakamoto had 7 home runs. He had 33 hits, so only 3 fewer than Kame. The guy I've been calling Kamazing, because he's so much better.
Yeah, you do that.
Yeah, because he's been so much better now as an older outfielder than he was as a younger player. So
you know, he had such a good July that and he made some really good plays in the outfield. That the other day in Yokohama, when he didn't make on Saturday when he didn't make a great play in the outfield and save the game, I was surprised.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. Shout out to Toshiki Abe of the Dragons, too. He had a very good July and is still, I think, again, quoting or referencing Pro Yaku News, he his past 5 games before Sunday's games, he was batting over 500. So he's been hot for the Dragons and been helping them stay in the fight there. Abe hit 368 in July, so he doesn't have a lot of RBIs. He had a couple home runs, nothing big, but just a shout out to him because I know he's not going to get it. What about pitcher in the Central League?
Aha! Uh-huh. Now here's the one. Now normally, as you know,
well, you just said they weren't going. Oh, that's right. You said they were going to be difficult to pick in both seasons, in both leagues.
Now normally, basically, if this was a couple of years ago, we have a pitcher who's 3-0, Shun Yamaguchi, who struck out a zillion guys. But you know what? A 4.25 ERA. And I'm thinking, are they going to make a guy pitcher of the month with a 4.25 ERA?
No, they can't do that. No.
No, they can, of course. But I'm thinking, rather than that, I would go with Yasuaki Yamasaki of the Bay Stars, who was 1-0 with 7 saves, 2 holds, and was really, really, really good. So he's my guy.
That's where they always run when everybody has about the same amount of wins, which we have Chris Johnson of the Carp. He's got 2 wins. Haruhiro Hamaguchi of the Bay Stars has 2 wins.
Chris Johnson really had a good month.
He had
actually a
good month, and I was thinking,
but 2 losses is just death.
Yeah, he doesn't have it. So I thought it was going to be hard, but I was trying to figure out who the reliever was going to be, and but there's one other guy who might get consideration, I think, and that's Taira Kamichatani of the Bay Stars, the man I call Cocktail.
The man you call Cocktail. Nobody else calls him Cocktail, John.
I bet you West Bay does because he's still having trouble saying Kamichatani. So I think he probably goes with Cocktail too, right, Michael?
Well,
Anyway, what about in the Pacific League?
In the Pacific League, okay. For the batter, I have... this is, I guess, probably the easiest one, which is Masataka Yoshida.
Yes.
Of Oryx,
yes.
And I don't really have a number 2. Now, the second, and I'm going to go back with the same dilemma. We have a 3.09 ERA for Taisuke Yamaoka is a little high.
Yes.
But he was 3-1, so that side's okay. It's not bad. I think he's probably going to win it. But if I had to pick an alternate, it would be Naoki
MVP
Yanishi. 8 holds, 1 loss. His 1 loss came on the unearned run he allowed, the only run he allowed. 0.31 whip. Come on.
Yeah, this is the old lefty. Yeah, the old lefty, the holds leader, right? The all-time holds leader.
yep.
for the fighters. And yeah, again, they don't have, there just aren't that many guys who had a really good July. I think our buddy Zach Neal recently on the show, it was 3-0, but not a lot of innings and an ERA of almost three and a half, well, approaching 3.25, let's say, or just above 3.25. So I don't think they'll give it to him there as well. So I think they're going to go to a reliever. I think you're right on that front as well. So we'll see. It'll be fun watching. I think those will be out next week. No, the week after next. So we'll hear in another week or so. All right. A few notes. One is that unfortunately we lost another former NPB player, and that was Luke Van Mill of the Netherlands, known as the tallest player in pro baseball. He died this past week. He was 34. I remember seeing him playing for the Dutch team at the WBC in 2013 here in Tokyo, and talking to some guys in front of the bench. He was on the bench and did speak to him a little bit during that tournament. And apparently now, was it a mishap that happened late last year or early this year? I remember running a story, and he had been hiking and apparently had a mishap and a fall and hit his head. And I guess he never really, or there was some damage that he just never really recovered from. I know that he was in the hospital for a while.
And he had, I didn't notice this because when I saw the news, I missed the news about him announcing his retirement. That he came back from it, but I haven't. I've talked to a couple of people who knew him, not close, but who knew him, and nobody was able to shed any light on it. But he was a friend, and I'm really gonna miss him. I have a couple of stories I've put on my website, but just a real likable guy, and it's a great loss.
All the best to him and his family, and rest in peace. And we've had a rash of injuries across NPB, probably too many to mention, but I did see one that was really strange, and that was DNA catcher Hikaru Ito, who was trying to make a catch on a pitch and ended up with a broken finger. I guess now you said it was the finger that's usually outside the catcher's mitt. That's the
right
one that's
it was
exposed.
On his left hand,
right? But all he was trying to do is catch a pitch. I guess he turned the glove the wrong way. And
I mean, how many catchers break fingers on the glove hand?
Yeah, it's usually a foul tip on, and you watch a lot of the catchers in Japan. They have the catching glove on the left hand, and that right hand, some of them tuck it behind them, but a lot of the catchers in Japan leave that right hand exposed out in front on the right knee sometimes. And those are the guys who end up taking a foul ball off the hand. But this was really weird that Ito suffered this break trying to catch a ball that just, and it wasn't tipped. Maybe it was tipped. I'm trying to replay the thing in my mind. I don't remember seeing it, but so he was injured. Ginjiro Sumitani of the Yomiuri Giants was injured. Yuji Kaneko took a pitch off his knee, and he's out indefinitely for the Cebu Lions. I think it's a broken bone in his knee. That was bad.
I forgot about Kaneko because Takuya Nakamura, I forget what his issue is out, and Sosuke Genda has a hamstring issue.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's like, what is NPB like feeling bad for the Yakult Swallows that they're all just like lining up the ambulances or something?
Right. It used to be the Swallows who just, but I mean, it's August. This is a lot of times when these things kind of happen. And we did mention earlier that Shun Yamaguchi of the Giants was deactivated, and that was because of discomfort in the elbow area. So we'll have to keep an eye on that as well. So a lot of injuries going around. So hope these guys get back soon, and hope they get healthy soon. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so one question this week is from Coaster Freak on Twitter, and he's got a high heat for us. He says, what do the Eagles do with Louis Okoye, given that he's on the farm and others are in front of him, including Jabari Blash, Hiroaki Shimauchi, and even Ren Wada, who is a recent trade pickup from the Giants, and those guys are all above him on the depth chart. Jim.
Man, well, I don't know. Do I just like keep rubbing salt in the eagle's wound? I mean, you guys figure they're going through a Tomoaki Kanemoto who's my outfielder moment. They don't seem to be able to figure out who their best players are. And my fear there is that if they keep doing what Kanemoto did, which is feel displeasure with every guy after watching him play about 10 games, none of these guys is ever going to get enough at bats and enough chances to actually make adjustments and figure out what he needs to do at the top level. And that 3 years down the road, we'll still be going, geez, Taiga Igoshi looks like he could really, really play, but geez, he's pushing 30 now. You know? That's so, I just hope that they don't go that direction. They got to make decisions. I don't mind having guys come up. I mean, you know, you do what the Hawks do, which is you got guys who are regulars, and you got guys who are trying to take their positions away. Okay, when the regulars get hurt, then the first guy up, you know, plays, you know, the next guy plays, and, you know, and he tries to prove he can play, and you let them earn their chances. But you either commit to guys, or they're either committed to, or they're playing on the farm full time, and they're you know, the substitutes are the older guys. But if you're the Tigers or you're the Eagles, it's like let's let these 23-year-olds learn how to play the outfield by playing once a week.
Once a week, yeah. That ought to polish him
exactly.
Up.
Exactly.
My thing is, it's amazing, Costa Freak, because I had been thinking the same thing at points during this season, and I thought it's time. You know, it's his fourth season. He's 22. He just turned 22. In July, the 21st of July. So, I actually think they're giving up on him when they trade for a couple outfielders they really don't need. It tells me they don't really see a future with him. So I'm thinking it's time to trade him. So I thought about some trade partners. Hanshin, for instance, because Hanshin. And this, yeah, the reason, like the reason this. Being, the reason being,
okay.
Because the Tigers don't have regular outfielders. I thought they could get, and without, other than Chikamoto, I think you're looking at Yoshio Itoi, who's, you know, pushing 40, yeah. and I'm thinking of guys he might replace. So okay. Kosuke Fukudome, who is over 40 already, and then they don't really have a regular outfielder in
the
field.
No, that's true.
So
they've already passed that whole class of people who was going to replace them are already too old to be anybody's replacement.
Right. So I'm thinking, and because he's still 22, you bring him in, and maybe he's in the system for a couple seasons. Maybe he's the future maybe right fielder for Hanshin. I thought he would be one because I think the Eagles probably could use some more pitching. They could use some arms, and I think the Tigers have some arms that they could spare. Shintaro Fujinami not being one of them. And then another partner I thought could be Oryx, because we keep talking about the talent on that squad. It has some pitching that it could spare and could use a strong outfielder and probably a really good center fielder. So I thought Oryx Buffaloes would be a good trade partner. Hiroshima, I don't think. Yakult probably could use him, but I don't know that they have anything to trade to get him. And then the outfield over there at Yakult is, we already talked about how a lot of those guys are defensively, they're replaceable. So he could step in and be a big contributor from day one in terms of being a good outfielder, a good center fielder. So I thought the Yakult Swallows would be a good spot, but I just don't think they have any trade pieces that they could use to acquire him. DNA, I thought, you know, I like Kazuki Kamisato. I think he's a up and coming player, but he just makes too many puzzling plays, takes bad routes to balls, misses balls.
Well, the Bay Stars are going to need a left fielder next year.
Yeah. You think Tsutsugo is going to the major leagues. Yeah. So I thought Yokohama could be one, but I'm not sure about the pitching that they could allow. But I think that actually DeNA has a lot of young pitchers or first or second year pitchers, perhaps a couple they could deal.
I think DNA's a good match, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that those were some of the things. But I say trade him. I don't think they're looking at him long term, and I think the Central League could use a player like that. And he's obviously got the physical tools to dominate defensively. Yeah. He can run the bases really aggressively. He just has to learn to hit.
Well,
we look at Yamato Maeda of the Bay Stars, who has made a living without really being able to hit very much at all. But because he's such a stellar defensive player, if you get a player like that and put him in center field, I think you live with the offense or lack thereof that you get.
And Yamato Maeda can also play in short and second,
various positions.
Yeah,
he's really good.
That's the difference.
It's true, but I mean, he can play everywhere for a guy who's
basically an outfielder. Learn to hit, I think, is a tough task unless you're only planning on being a fifth outfielder. My one concern, you know, with these teams who do this, Rock 10, Oryx, Hanshin, outfield shell game, very much a Hiroshima Carp used to do this. And the Hiroshima Carp had a whole basket of outfielders. And one day Marty Brown said, we want to get a left-handed pitcher, so, you know, who can we get rid of? Can we get a left-handed reliever? I mean, we got all these outfielders that are doing nothing. So I says, well, which one of these guys can we lose without losing anything? And they said Kazuki Fukuchi, who was a guy who was a fast guy who never amounted to anything. And then the only thing Kazuki Fukuchi was missing in Hiroshima was playing time. As soon as he went to the Cebu Lions, he was a regular, you know, and he was a base stealing champ, you know, he was a regular for 2 years, and then he went to Yakult, and then where he was a regular and a really good player for a couple of years. So I think it's sometimes you've got these guys, you just don't know who are any good because you can never make up your mind about them.
Right.
So I also see it's very likely that they could trade. I mean, I don't know. I don't really have an opinion. I don't have the TrackMan data on, you know, how the ball is coming off his bat. And I suspect also that Louis Okoye is a guy who came late to baseball.
That's correct.
And he's a Shota Dobayashi guy who's a really good athlete, but it just really isn't a good baseball player.
He has all the physical tools to be a great baseball player. But he's just not really good at the game. Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is a Mike Davis kind of R.J. Reynolds kind of baseball player, a really good athlete. You know, some guy who's good at fundamental skills, but doesn't really put it all together. So I think there's that possibility with Okoye. He's got the impressive physical tools, no doubt. But
okay.
So those are my two concerns. One is that he might be really good because nobody knows, that they haven't really given him a chance, or two, that he might not really be good at all. So anyway, which is about as far, you know, sort of like having both sides of the coin. I really don't know what to think about Louis Okoye.
All right, Andy, thank you very much for the question, Coaster Freak. Anyone else who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast with the hashtag HighHeat, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Get them hot ballparks, kids.